The Digital Head Voice podcast is brought to you by MedTech World in collaboration with Digital Health Malta. Episode number 25. Whoa, a quarter of a way to 100. Today, we have some Turkish flavor to our podcast. And the Turkish flavor that we have is of Burak Özkasan. Özkasan is the CEO and founder of Pera Labs. You'll be listening to some very interesting topics here, but the concept of fertility comes really, really high on the agenda in this podcast. And we even have like some insight into family health. And with that in mind, let's dive deep into the podcast. So, welcome Burak to the Digital Health Voice. Believe it or not, Burak, it's the 25th episode. Not bad at all. It's like one quarter of the way to 100. So, with a little bit more persistence, we'll actually get there. But Burak, you know, we love to hear stories on the Digital Health Voice. And we love to hear stories for the simple reason that it really brings out the core of digital health, which is, you know, the human connection, the human relationship, the human healthcare professional. And I'd love to hear about your digital health journey. How did you end up on the Digital Health Voice? Like, how did you end up in digital health in the first place? Tell me all about it.
Stefan, thank you very much for the invitation. So I'm really happy to be here talking about what we do and why we do. I'm Burak Özkasan. I'm the founder and the CEO of Pera Labs. And as a Pera Labs, the whole idea, actually, it was not digital in the beginning. All I wanted during my PhD and working on sperm and eggs in Canada at McGill University, just sitting in front of the microscope hours and hours, try to find which sperm are better than the others and try to separate them and so on. I said, why we don't have any automation like the cancer researchers have or like infectious diseases people have. So there was no automation. And then it was just like a dream. But then, you know, after the PhD, I was in Boston and then I had an opportunity to meet some optics engineers and they were building an amazing microscopes. And I said, okay, so, and I saw that the microscopes are digital now. So then we have an opportunity to basically innovate the reproduction, the human reproduction. So the idea came from there. I was very lucky and fortunate to meet amazing the deep learning experts. I asked them basically like, is it possible? They said, sure, it is possible. And then the concept was if we can do or apply artificial intelligence into, you know, segmenting and classifying different faces, different car license plates and so on. So why not to be done for moving the only moving cell in the body, which is the sperm, and then that can be done. So it started and it became digital. And then when I founded Pera Labs, I wanted like a technology. It's more like a platform. So then many things, not only our company, but other researchers and other companies can also input and integrate with their technologies. So then people can use as a platform. Yeah.
Wow, fascinating.
The idea was just like having a microscope and then try to do like an automated, but it had to be done because it's like an A to Z of fertility treatment. So you figure out, okay, you found the best sperm, but what you do with it? So connecting all the data, it had to be digital health.
Amazing. So if I may ask, are you involved in IVF programs or are you working with healthcare organizations that offer IVF possibly? I'm like simply curious there.
Yeah. So actually our, because it was very difficult, like, you know, when you work with clinics, so you have to go through and as a scientist, so you just have to follow all the ethic board, you know, the patient consent, the GDPR, the HIPAA compliance and many things. So in the beginning, it's very difficult because you have to make sure that you have a compliance with all these the legislation or regulatory issues. And each country has a different setup for that. So when we started in Philadelphia in the United States, it was straightforward. So because it covered the whole the health system. So we worked with Fairfax Cryobank, which is a sperm and egg bank. They do the sperm donation and egg donation for patients who need and who cannot produce these cells. So we did a preclinical study with them, and then it was pretty much just started with the images and the video clips of sperm cells through the microscope. It started like that. It was difficult, of course, because you know these are big corporations, like they have many branches, and then we're a small startup and we're just starting, and then we need data to see basically what we claim actually it works as we say, and then how we can make it better in terms of the performance and efficiency and like what they need from us, like to make their life in the clinic easier also. So it started like that in Europe. So in Malta, we have amazing partners. So in France and in Malta, actually, there's a new fertility clinic, which allows us to see the private side of the private industry side, and then the hospital side, because they're completely different how they get patients. Most of it the smaller clinics, and then we tried to, because the fertility clinics are they function like a cosmetic surgery or like hair transplantation or aesthetic surgery kind of way. So they're all like separate than the hospital system. So a lot of things when you try to, knock on the door for a hospital, so you have to go through the management people, not necessarily the doctors. But in the clinic, the doctor is the owner most of the time, and he or she knows basically what they are dealing with technical issues. So it was easy to approach them comparing to the hospital system.
So that's very interesting, because here you're like kind of making a distinction between the fertility clinics and the actually healthcare organizations and how your offering, let's say, fits into the full picture of the digital health platform. But beyond what you are, what you're offering today, like how do you convince, let's say, because, I'm a medical doctor. But how do you convince medical doctors who are, or possibly obstetricians or gynecologists who are working specifically in this field? And I'm smiling because my wife is an obstetrician and gynecologist as well. So this topic does come up every now and then. So how do you convince OBGYNs to, especially those working in fertility, to take up your offering? What's the value proposition from your part?
Yeah, that's like a million-dollar question. I think. I will do my take on that. So it's how I see this, especially with the digital health aspect of it, because if you have a medical device, so your technology goes through like your clinical trials, there's this strong clinical evidence, so then it shows that it works and that's easy. But with the digital health, and then from our side, we have to, we have to show that, hey, if you use our technology, so your live birth rates from your clinic will be higher, and it will be significantly higher. People, instead of going to clinic B, they will come to you. So for us, it's not a who pays for what in terms of like an insurance or anything, because unfortunately many places on the planet, so the fertility treatments are out of pocket expenses. So that's big expense to go through. And so there's a competition. So, the analogy I give with like a hair transplantation or any cosmetic surgery actually applies there. It's all on you. So, and then when people are choosing the clinic, which clinic they want to go, they look at their performance. Okay, what's their success rate? We try to tell them like, okay, so we have an evidence, a preclinical evidence, and we have a basic, very small study, the clinical data. It shows that it can be helpful. But I mean, at the moment, it's very difficult, like including myself and many other startups, to say that, okay, here's the evidence. It's going to create such a significant the positive effect on the business for the doctor. So how we go is, I call it a patient pressure. So, you know, I will say something. It's like a lot of doctors we talk are very, very traditionalist. So it's obvious because of the training. So they know certain methods, techniques, and then they've been trying several years in different patients. Everything works fine. And then providing them something totally different, like kind of like an iPhone. But then imagine that when the first iPhone came out, and then you claim that, and then it's going to be changing the whole dynamics of the treatment strategies. So you have to convince them, right? So that convincing, we go through the indirect way. So, okay, we try to talk to the couples for us. The way we go is the major pain points, not necessarily, oh, it's going to help you spend less. It's going to help you spend less time analyzing certain things, so then you will save in the labor, and then you can do more difficult cases, let's say. But beyond that, in terms of how it's going to affect the performance, so we start with very difficult cases. We try to show them, okay, especially the aging with the father's aging, and then how that affects the offspring, the child. So we try to figure out. So like, right now, what we are focusing on is like mostly if they have older patients, let's say older, the father to be ones. And we try to say that, okay, so the success rate is so low that whatever you do, actually, they're willing to accept anything even beyond that percentage. So that's one thing. But I think each domain, I mean, if you're in cardiology or neurology or orthopedics, I think there are differences, but I can talk about the fertility aspect of it. The more difficult the cases, we have more chances to see, to show them, because there are no other tools. I mean, either you know, you choose something, or you're just gonna go with the low efficient, you know, not really efficiently working system. So, but if we have a lot of competitors, it's very difficult to. Is like a technique is already working very well. Why you need the digital version of it? But we try to go with the ones that there's nothing or underdeveloped the cases, I would say, or the techniques. Yeah.
Interesting. You know, Burak, I mean, there you've went to through a hole. You've went through actually one of the most intriguing questions and intriguing challenges that we face as doctors. Sometimes we're so used to doing things in the old way, and because we work under time pressures and because we have to work every day, it's not as if we're like a hotel, for example, where we can close down the hotel for 3 weeks and we just focus on preparing for the change without the guests running around. But no, in healthcare, we end up having to prepare for a change whilst people are literally jumping on you, asking for your attention or having to deal with an emergency. I think that kind of challenge that we face in healthcare to do any form of change management, we have like the engine is still running at full steam ahead. It's very, very difficult or very unlikely where you have a situation where a healthcare organization closes down for a short while to undergo a big change. It's not that common. If we have options, you know, yes, we would do that. Well, that's not so often. But with that in mind, Burak, this quite is interesting. You know, we bought the element of knowledge translation as well, like translating knowledge into a startup, you know, into an entrepreneur. That's really great. I mean, even you seeing you doing these jumps and hurdles. First, you know, you mentioned Philadelphia, then you mentioned Boston, and now Malta. You know, it's really great that you've done this journey. And I think we can all be inspired by what you've been through. But if we had to look into the future a bit now, Burak, like, What does the future look like for digital health and medtech, and possibly, you know, especially in your field? How do you see it evolving further? Do you see, you know, IVF treatment, or do you see, you know, all the work that goes into preparing for this very, very, you know, painstaking process, so to speak? How do you see digital health fitting into the picture, and medtech as well? Like, how do you see it coming all together?
Yeah, I think it's amazing times, because so like all the papers I see now, like really high impact papers, are right now in fertility talking about that the things that we couldn't imagine, you know, like developing testes or the ovaries in the chip, in the laboratory, and many other things that would help, let's say, the cancer, like puberty cancer patients, for instance. Because, I mean, the stem cells were helping in a certain way, but now if you take a stem cell and then it might bring the cancer back, because the cancer is there. But imagine that, you know, you have the sperm, or and then it's pretty much kind of edited, and then it's free of the cancer. So then the kid grow up, and then, you know, he will have an opportunity to have a child, and without worrying about if his cancer can, you know, come back in the child. So what I mean is, like, the new things, and a lot of things changing. So the technology, and then the especially with the deep learning. So right now, the using AI in like choosing the better embryo, it's there. It's you know, I've been going to several conferences, and doctors are fine with it. So there's a really good evidence in from different centers all around the world. So that's amazing. And then people start working, even they are from different private clinics, rather than competing, and then who's going to get one technology, and then, you know, it will be like an in-house technology comparing to the other ones. It is getting a big network. So everyone is using the same technology, and but different places, different demographics, you know, different racial backgrounds and different circumstances and lifestyles and so on. But then all these different methods are actually getting collected. There's a huge data coming in. Back in the day, we would do like a meta-analysis and systematic reviews and stuff. But now it's there are reviews of this huge and massive data. What I see that the data is getting accumulated from all around the world. And the innovation part is also taking most of time. The researchers at the institutions, the academic institutions, were the leading parts. Last 5 years, there are maybe five companies, and they started as a startup. They're leading the innovation in IVF. That's amazing. It never happened before. It was very conservative in terms of being open to innovation. But the last 5 years, although there was COVID, because all the academic institutions were closed, but these small startups, they kept working. And so there is some development. Last 2 years, while people were kind of quiet or like silent, because they couldn't do much research or at all, you know, at the universities, there were small companies start doing things. So in terms of the data, there's huge data coming in. And what I see, like maybe 5 to 10 years, there will be like a need of like data aggregators, like or warehouses, then all the data will be coming in, and then people will be knocking on their doors. Hey, you know, I need this pregnancy data in these countries from like in 1990 or like 2006 to like 2019 or something. So then there will be more things kind of research and analyzed in a better way, I think. It will be shorter. So the papers are coming out in a shorter time now. That's very interesting. It used to take, you know, to publish in Nature or Cell or Lancet or JAMA, you know, now it's shorter. So then the dissemination of knowledge and the clinical innovation, it's easier and more affordable, I think. So there will be a lot of changes, I believe that. And there will be a lot of collaborative work. And then this is happening in, you know, different scientific conferences, different expos. Now everyone is meeting and then try to figure out, this is the finance part, the venture capitals, because they need, you need the money to support the the project and then turn into a commercial or clinical product, I would say, and they will help people's help saving people's life or increasing the quality of life, basically. So I think the 10 years is going to be really amazing. Very exciting.
Wow. I mean, when you mentioned data warehouses and data, you kind of reminded me actually of data pipelines. This is actually one of my favorite topics. So just mentioning all of this, I said, okay, great. I'd love to work with you and to, you know, especially now that you are also based in Malta. So that's really fantastic to know what you're doing there, especially from a research point of view. I think there's a lot that can be done there. But Burak, believe it or not, we're coming close to the end of the podcast. Like, really, time flies by when you're having fun. And I want to give you an opportunity. You have now 1 minute to raise awareness on any specific topic of your choice. So you mentioned a couple of things, but it doesn't have to be healthcare. So you can choose any specific topic, and I invite you to raise awareness on it. The floor is yours. Go for it.
Thank you. And I think it's, my goal is try to start with like thinking local and applying to global scale. So I turn this like a funnel the other way around. I want to say that it's sometimes, maybe we live in a smaller place or so we have our friends and family, but then we don't pay attention much, like what would happen when we are kids. So I was worried, like when I had my kid, my son, that like looking into that, like how healthy it's going to be. So what I would say that, from our side, we have to take care of ourselves. But of course, when the time comes and then you want to start a family, we have to be really looking into things, so both parties, father to be and mother to be. So it's very important. I think that the most valuable and most important investment is the family. So we just have to be really, I would say, looking into awareness in terms of our own health. And we call it the family health. So it's all the way to the baby. So we just have to pay more attention, I think, because that's the major part. And the family health. So just pay more attention in terms of the lifestyles and potential things coming through the family, or we are not aware of it maybe. So we just have to be more aware, I think. That's my suggestion.
Yeah. Burak, you've got my vote. As a daddy of a 4-year-old, I would vote for you for sure. but really, I mean, actually, this is so unique. I love this 1 minute because there's always a unique topic coming up. And now the topic that you've mentioned is family health. Like not just thinking about individual health, but about family health and how that can possibly affect the rest of the family's health. So that's really, really interesting. And sometimes I haven't even started thinking about that. But with that in mind, I'd like to thank you, Burak. I would thank all our listeners. You can follow us and listen to us on all podcast players. We're pretty much everywhere. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts, you name it, and you can find us there. If you have any podcast player and we're not there, please reach out to our team and we'll try our very best to accommodate your request. We're also available on social media, on the MedTech World socials, on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn. You find us there and you can get the latest podcast, which is also available as a video. So with that in mind, thank you, Burak, and I'll see you in Malta, hopefully, in November.
Yes. Cheers. The conference, definitely. Thank you very much for the invitation, Stefan.
Yeah, sure.
Cheers.